Harper Audio presents Surprised by Joy by C.S. Lewis. Read by Peter Noble. Preface. This book is written partly in answer to requests that I would tell how I passed from atheism to Christianity, and partly to correct one or two false notions that seem to have got about. How far the story matters to anyone but myself depends on the degree to which others have experienced what I call joy. If it is at all common, a more detailed treatment of it than has, I believe, been attempted before may be of some use. I've been emboldened to write of it because I noticed that a man seldom mentions what he had supposed to be his most idiosyncratic sensations without receiving from at least one, often more of those present, the reply, "What, have you felt that too? I always thought I was the only one." The book aims at telling the story of my conversion and is not a general autobiography, still less confessions like those of St. Augustine or Rousseau. This means in practice that it gets less like a general autobiography as it goes on. In the earlier chapters, the net has to be spread pretty wide in order that, when the explicitly spiritual crisis arrives, the reader may understand what sort of person my childhood and adolescence had made me. When the build-up is complete, I confine myself strictly to business and omit everything, however important by ordinary biographical standards, which seems, at that stage, irrelevant. I do not think there is much loss. I never read an autobiography in which the parts devoted to the earlier years were not far the most interesting. The story is, I fear, suffocatingly subjective, the kind of thing I've never written before and shall probably never write again. I've tried so to write the first chapter that those who can't bear such a story will see at once what they're in for and close the book with the least waste of time. C.S. Lewis. Chapter 1. The First Years. Happy, but for so happy, ill-secured. Milton. I was born in the winter of 1898 at Belfast, the son of a solicitor and of a clergyman's daughter. My parents had only two children, both sons, and I was the younger by about 3 years. Two very different strains had gone to our making. My father belonged to the first generation of his family that reached professional station. His grandfather had been a Welsh farmer. His father, a self-made man, had begun life as a workman, emigrated to Ireland, and ended as a partner in the firm of McIlwain and Lewis, boilermakers, engineers, and ironship builders. My mother was a Hamilton, with many generations of clergymen, lawyers, sailors, and the like behind her. On her mother's side, through the Warrens, the blood went back to a Norman knight whose bones lie at Battle Abbey. The two families from which I spring were as different in temperament as in origin. My father's people were true Welshmen, sentimental, passionate, and rhetorical, easily moved both to anger and to tenderness, men who laughed and cried a great deal and who had not much of the talent for happiness. The Hamiltons were a cooler race. Their minds were critical and ironic, and they had the talent for happiness in a high degree, went straight for it, as experienced travellers go for the best seat in a train. From my earliest years, I was aware of the vivid contrast between my mother's cheerful and tranquil affection and the ups and downs of my father's emotional life, and this bred in me, long before I was old enough to give it a name, a certain distrust or dislike of emotion as something uncomfortable and embarrassing, and even dangerous. Both my parents, by the standards of that time and place, were bookish or clever people. My mother had been a promising mathematician in her youth and a BA of Queen's College Belfast, and before her death was able to start me both in French and Latin. She was a voracious reader of good novels, and I think the Merediths and Tolstoys which I have inherited were bought for her. My father's tastes were quite different. He was fond of oratory, and had himself spoken on political platforms in England as a young man. If he had had independent means, he would certainly have aimed at a political career. In this, unless his sense of honour, which was fine to the point of being quixotic, had made him unmanageable, he might well have succeeded, for he had many of the gifts once needed by a parliamentarian. A fine presence, a
Sample complete. Ready to continue?